2 weeks ago on this program, we received a call from Jackie Fishman in Charlotte, North Carolina. She'd received an old fur coat as a gift from her mother, but was torn about what to do with it. She found the coat beautiful, but is opposed to killing animals for the sake of outerwear. Our ethicist and New York Times Magazine columnist Randy Cohen advised Ms. Fishman not to wear the coat. Randy joins us now. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Jennifer.
We asked our listeners to send in ideas about how to put old furs to use. Among the many letters agreeing with Randy, we got some interesting suggestions. Susan Pixley in Rochester, New York, says the coat might find a second life as a teddy bear. I received a fur stole from my grandmother, she writes, and knew I would not ever use it, so I had the stole turned into a couple of teddy bears for my grandchildren. It makes me feel good to be able to pass something along from my grandmother to my grandchildren, and the bears can be displayed without offending anyone. How about that, Randy?
I appreciate the sentiment, but I'm not so sure I like the idea. There's just a little too much of the aroma of taxidermy about it. it seems, I have to say, slightly grotesque. If you think it's a terrible thing to inflict pain on an animal to make a coat, I'm not sure what message you're passing on to kids. And I worry if there were a human being you wanted to remember, what kind of doll are you people making?
Well, Phyllis Daniel in Cypress, California, had another idea. She says she gave her old furs to the local university's drama department for use as costumes. And she wrote to us, much to my surprise, I'm now considered a friend of their liberal arts program and get invitations and announcements of all kinds of events.
I like that one a lot. I think that's a great idea. I'm not sure America's burgeoning theatrical community is vast enough to accommodate all the fur coats of America, but it's a great idea. And darn it, I'm going to do that with all my handguns.
Finally, we got several letters from Alaska, where warm furs are more of a necessity than a fashion statement. Pamela Bumstead manages the Moravian Bookstore in Bethel, Alaska, which serves the native peoples along the Bering Sea. She writes, "For some of us, fur is a necessity. No matter how much polar fleece one has, if you can afford it, nothing substitutes for sealskin, mitts, or a fur ruff at 35 below zero." She says Eskimo elders on limited incomes could use cast-off fur to make traditional crafts for sale.
Yeah, I'm with her. Native peoples in northern climates can certainly make the claims of utility, but my imaginary Aunt Mima in Miami Beach cannot. And I think very few of our listeners actually are native peoples in Arctic climes.
All right. Well, let's move on to a new problem. Listener Troy Kylan joins us on the line now from Denver. Hi, Troy.
Hi.
You've got two daughters, but your problem is with the Boy Scouts. What's your question for Randy?
My question is that I often get approached to buy popcorn for the Boy Scouts, and I don't usually buy any because of their policy of allowing discrimination based on sexual orientation, something that the Supreme Court recently upheld. And by doing so, I'm withholding funding from a program that overall helps kids, something that I even participated in as a kid and found a lot of benefit in. So I'm wondering, how can I support the grassroots activities of Boy Scouts even when I strongly oppose their discrimination at the national level?
So, Randy, what about that dilemma?
I sympathize entirely. I was a Boy Scout myself, a particularly bad one, I might add. And I realize how much the scouting means to so many people. So it's with great sadness that I entirely concur with Troy. You wouldn't donate to an organization that excluded African Americans and sexual preferences entitled to the same respect. That the Boy Scouts are a discriminatory organization, and not casually, officially, as Mr. Killen said, they went to the Supreme Court to defend their right to discriminate against a whole class of children, and no honorable person can support that. In fact, many localities had to withdraw their facilities because the scouting's policies violate non-discrimination statutes. So, on the local level, if a troop formally breaks with national scouting, and that's not so easy to do, then you could support them. But unless they do that, I can't see how you could. But there are alternatives that you can give to the Girl Scouts, you can give to the Girls or Boys Clubs, the Campfire Girls and Boys, or Canadian Scouting, or in fact, the scouting organization in nearly any European country. Could you start the first Canadian Scout troop in Colorado?
I don't think that's possible. This situation became real personal for me when a friend's son approached me to buy popcorn, and that's when I really had the dilemma, because it was easier to say no to this when it was people I didn't know in the grocery store approaching me, and now I have 7-year-old children that I know asking me why I won't buy popcorn from them, and it made it that much harder for me.
My question, too, is why haven't the parents explained to a child that this is a profoundly discriminatory organization? What kind of lesson are the parents sending when they allow their kids to join the group? That sometimes there are larger issues than getting to go camping.
The parents that I spoke to said that they've really researched the local level and found there not to exist discrimination in their actual pack and group, so they felt comfortable with it, and that's how they resolved the issue.
Randy, tricky. What about that? You
well, I think it's it. Tricky. I think it's tricky that some local groups have articulated a formal policy separating themselves from the national organization. And if the group really does that, then join it. And then I think you can buy all the popcorn you want.
Okay.
Is that helpful, Mr. Carlin?
That helps a lot. I feel like I'm supported in my decision because I definitely questioned it when this became more personal. And I feel like I have more reason to stick to this and go ahead with it.
Troy Kylan joined us from Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you've got a question for the ethicist or you want to sell him some popcorn, drop us a line at watc@npr.org. Put the word ethics in the subject line and be sure to give us a phone number where we can reach you. Randy Cohen, thanks.
I've enjoyed it. And as a radio professional, Jennifer, I'm sure you know that a big mouthful of popcorn right before you go on the air is just the ticket.